Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Community Radio with your host, Steve Pallas and Jonah Vallow. Welcome to our show where we talk about the best practices in the world of grassroots sports, and we've got a great show planned for you today. We'll be talking about Steve's recent visit to the FNQ, or Far North Queensland, specifically Cairns, where he was at the Parks and Leisure Conference, and you must have had an absolute ball up there, mate.
It was warmer than Melbourne, Joe. It was warmer than Melbourne, but I got to tell you that I spent most of my time at the Parks and Leisure Conference in Cairns in the convention centre with a jacket on because the air conditioning was so cold. So it was a great event put on by Parks and Leisure Australia, and it brought together councils, the sport and rec teams, the open space teams. And the parks teams, hence the parks part of the Parks and Leisure side of it. So it brought everyone that's involved in sport and recreation at predominantly a council level together. And it was really great place to share ideas and to learn about what's happening from a council perspective, which is really interesting, but also to see what happens, what's happening in the space of people that are helping support councils. And I've got to tell you, Joe, there's a lot happening in the space of children's playgrounds. It's nothing to do with a sports community, but I was staggered at the number of presenters and exhibitors that had amazing children's playgrounds. So
it's often it's one of those topics that when you get to clubs and you talk to the committee or you're on the committee and the council comes up, it's like almost people hanging their head, not absolutely either furious at the council or being blown over the head so many times with the council hammer of rejection that they've just, completely anti-council, or new and fresh and with a hell of a lot of ideas on how to go to the council, but none of them being too practical. So this is it's really an opportune time to kind of work out how best clubs out there, grassroots sports clubs, can work with their councils, because it is one of the real pillars of success, isn't it, Steve, as a club, to be able to have establish a relationship with your council sport and rec officer and develop that relationship so you are effectively working as a team.
Yeah, that was one of the things that became really clear through the conference, Joe, was that that council is not just the landlord of most clubs, but they're really the primary partner of the club. And it was interesting When we compare the thoughts of many clubs in that we hear in the training sessions, and then compare it to councils and the way they think about their clubs, there really is a little bit of a disconnect, and primarily that's due to the fact that councils are just physically unable to do everything that clubs want, whether it be to renovate a room and expand a room, get another oval, or give them funding to do something. Take for instance the Mornington Peninsula Shire, which we're recording this podcast from in sunny Mornington, Joe. And I know for a fact that there's something over 400 sports pavilions and community pavilions and community buildings just within the Mornington Peninsula Shire. So if you assume that one of those needs to be renovated every year, and we're talking a couple of $100,000 to $1 million renovation or replacement or whatever, then you all of a sudden see that it takes a long time to go through and rejuvenate those 400 buildings. And those 400 buildings, where they're being shared by, they can be shared by up to 500, 600, 800 community groups, all wanting support and funds and those sorts of things. So once you start to get that sort of idea about the magnitude of support the council's already providing to sports clubs, you can see why they can't always provide the financial support the clubs need. But that said, councils offer so many other opportunities for assistance that clubs just don't realise and don't understand. And I guess the area that a couple of areas that really wanted to touch on, but it's certainly on the participation side and the volunteer side, and also the when you're running major events, are three areas where councils just can complement clubs particularly. And so, Joe, if I just start with that participation side, and participation's not just players, it's volunteers and it's supporters and it's sponsors and it's people that can help us achieve our goals. Council, one of the things that council do is that they work with everybody in the community. And particularly those people that are maybe a little bit disconnected or that are looking for ways of being connected with the community. And so if you're a club that needs participants or needs volunteers or needs support from the business side of the community, well, the first place I'd actually be going is to council, Joe, because,
yes,
because they're already working. It's not necessarily the sport and rec person within council, but that's always the first place to start and say, hey, we're volunteers short. We need this sort of volunteer, or we need that sort of volunteer, or we're looking to expand. Or better still, we're looking to open up our club room, our club, to be more open and inclusive of more people within the community, whether it's people with disabilities, whether it's people with that are coming from new cultures, or whether it's different groups such as mothers groups, Joe, that really are groups of people that are fantastic assets to clubs, but are just a little bit isolated during the early stages of looking after newborns. And so councils can connect people very, very well, people that want to be connected to clubs that need those connections. So that's one of the first things. The second thing, Joe, is that councils have tremendous experience in event management. They put on major events every single year. And again, we just talk about the Moyinger Peninsula Shire here. They put on the Tea Tree Festival, which is a 3 or 4 day major event, the Australia Day Festival, major event. I mean, they're putting on events that draw tens of thousands of people together multiple times of the year. So they understand about the logistics of pulling together an event. So often when we start to think about events, we almost start to think about council as an adversary, because we've got to go to them for permits and licensing and road those sorts of things. Whereas, yes, we do need to do that, but what we can also be going to them for, Joe, is to tap into their expertise. You know, if we're going to be doing if we're a cricket club and we decide to do carols by candlelight over Christmas in the cricket ground, or we decide to run a season of outdoor cinemas, an outdoor cinema on the oval to bring the community in. You know, if they're major events, they can all of a sudden be attracting a couple of thousand people, which most clubs aren't really used to dealing with those sorts of people and or understand the infrastructure that's required. But your council knows that day in, day out. Council is a fantastic partner for helping you do some of the things other than play the sport itself. But the other side of it is on the facility side. I mean, this is where most of the frustration comes about, is because that clubs decide today that they want to have their facilities renovated, or they want new cricket nets, or they want an extra netball court, or they want to put a roof over a bowling green or something like that. And council just, they've got their priorities for the next period of time all mapped out. And clubs get really disappointed and frustrated by that when they don't get that immediate satisfaction. But if we change the way we approach councils and say, well, this is what we're trying to do within the community, which we would like we would like to include more people on the bowling green, and to do that we need to put roofs and lights over so that we can play during all winter and summer. How do you suggest we go about doing that? Right, and then that's a much very different conversation. Can we have $400,000, and why not? And that gets people working in conjunction with each other, because council have exactly the same objectives as clubs: maximise the value of a community asset to the community. So if we can leverage off the knowledge and the experience of council, that's a tremendous asset for clubs. And council have got lots of paid employees. So lots of the roles that clubs, if they work in partnership with council can actually do those tasks on behalf of clubs, if you have the right mindset and you ask the right person. So one of the things that came out of the conference for me, Joe, was to try and work out ways and to reinforce in our training sessions and through things like the radio show and the podcast, that we've got to step back from treating councils so adversarially and look to treat them like they really are, which is probably our primary partner in maximising the value of our club to its community. So, yeah, it was a really interesting conference from that perspective. And to listen to – it would have been really good for many clubs to be there, because even though it wasn't a conference for clubs, but to listen to the way that councils and their staff were talking about clubs – and all they had was the best interests of their clubs. You know, that's what they were doing. How can we help them? How can we give them better facilities? How can we increase the number of people that are having access to them? How can we make it easier for the volunteers?
Mm.
How can we make it easier for the volunteers? So it really dawned on me while I was, yes, basking in 33-degree heat, in nice blue skies and sunshine, Joe, and palm trees are good for thinking. palm tree lined
boulevards.
That's right. Taking the sky rail up the forest, up the rainforest.
Kerenda, yeah,
yeah. Which I can't think of another time I've been so scared in my whole life, Joe. Taking that sky rail up there, but was that innate adversarial relationship between clubs and council. We need to work out how to just bring them together and get them working together a lot more than they currently are, because they've got the same objectives.
Yeah, absolutely. And the amount of times I've gone to clubs and I've heard the same, foot stomping rant. There's only one way that we're going to make the council listen to us, and that's not vote for them.
Go to the media.
and so I say to them, who you're not going to vote for, because you're dealing with your sport and rec officer.
Mm.
We won't vote for them. Well, they're not it's not an elected office. This is an actual employee of the council. And even that misunderstanding is like incredible to a lot of clubs out there, because this kind of antiquated, let's put pressure on the councillor to try and get what we want, or let's scream and rant at the person that's on the phone, it just doesn't get you anywhere. In fact, what it could do is just cause more roadblocks.
Yeah, the sad thing is that every now and then, Joe, it does, which then reinforces that's the process to happen, that every now and then, and particularly we're coming into a period where that can happen, because we're coming into an election period in Victoria, whether it's a state or local council election period. So,
but we don't recommend that process because it's not sustainable, right?
Well, certainly the reality is we do need to understand the political process, and from a club perspective, there are times where we can use that political process to our advantage, but that time really is only in a very short window of opportunity around election period. So, it's we're always been about partnership and making it easier for clubs. But I think one of the key things to understand is that we need to understand the restrictions of council. Now, we don't need to accept them, right? And I was reading the our Moreton Shire Council newsletter that came out today. And I saw that the Mount Martha Life Saving Club had just got $1 million renovation. $1 million renovation. $700,000 was provided by the local council. Now, whether that's through state grants and federal grants, I'm not sure. But $400,000 was provided by the Life Saving Club. $450,000, I think it was. So just because council aren't able to help you right now, that doesn't mean to say that whatever it is that you want to achieve has to stop. Mm. So we need to be looking at working with council and complementing and moving away from the adversarial side of it. And the challenge for us volunteers, Joe, is that understanding council needs to take some time, and time's a thing we don't have the least of. But it starts with a mindset change, and I guess that's what we're all about, is creating that mindset change. So, yeah, it was an interesting conference, and next year's conference is in Sydney, I think, which is nowhere near as exotic as Cairns.
There you have it. Okay, well, thanks for that, mate, and some really, really important tips on how to work with your local council. Stay tuned. We've got plenty more here on Sports Community Radio. You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Steve Pellis and Joe Novella, another Sports Community digital production, courtesy of www.sportscommunity.com.au.
I'm here with Lucinda Coombs, who is the Healthy Communities Coordinator here at Alice Springs Town Council. And that, by the way, is just one of her very many hats. She's very active in the community as a volunteer. And part of the volunteering is with the Rotary Club here in Alice Springs. And, of course, they are involved in one of the most famous fundraising regattas in all of Australia, and that is the Henley on Todd. So I wonder, Lucinda, if you could just start by telling us a little bit about the history of the Henley on Todd, and just filling us in on what it means to the community.
Yeah, look, it's a huge iconic event in Alice Springs. I'm one of the newer board members that has had the pleasure of helping to organise the Henley on Todd for 2013, and will serve another 2 years on the board. I joined Rotary over 12 months ago, and I'm with the Rotary Club of Stewart. There are three Rotary Clubs in Alice Springs, of which over 50 years ago, we have had our 50th anniversary, a great group of formidable sort of Rotarians decided to get together and come up with a bit of a dry river regatta. Everyone always says we've got this beautiful river in Alice Springs called the Todd River, but rarely does the river run. It's like a dry riverbed. So the concept came about having a bit of a dry river regatta, a bit of a play on words, a bit of a community event to see how people would respond, and of course a key fundraiser for Rotary, who nationally and internationally raise funds for disadvantaged people and for helping people with health and all sorts of scholarships and so forth. So over 50 years ago, a group of men and women got together. They organised the first Henley on Todd. The Henley on Todd is about events that happen in the riverbed and making the most of, I guess, a water scenario without water.
Yeah.
So the same sort of things that you would do in the water happen. So there's activities like running through the sand with man-made boats. There's a particular event where people can enter and make their own boat. So you have school groups and sporting groups put together and make boats out of poly pipe or steel, or it could be just something like flags, and they have races in the river. The events include things like bathtub races, where you have four people carrying a boat. We always try and get a light person to sit in the boat. There's lots of spills in the sand, sand digging, who can fill the bucket first, the hamster wheel, where you're running through a massive steel wheel to try and get through the sand. And I think one of the biggest things that has been on YouTube and gets nationally identified is the big, I guess, fight at the end against the battleships. So you've got the Pirates, the Navy, and they have this big sort of water bomb, flower bomb, explosive fight. So it looks like they're big boats in the dry sand, but they're actually on wheels, and they've had boats built up around them.
Awesome.
And yeah, it's messy. So they have a big fight.
And the thing about it is that we talk to a lot of clubs, and even in this series of sessions that we're running here in the Northern Territory, and they wonder what kinds of things that they can do to raise funds. And we tell them, you know, sometimes the crazier the better.
Yeah.
And the Henley on Todd now is fixed in our minds. We don't see it as strange. But when you think of it from the very outset, you know, you think, here we are, we're going to have a boat race in a river that doesn't run or runs very rarely.
Absolutely.
And it's the same kind of principle as the Birdman rallies, you know, in Moomba and other places around Australia, crazy things. But for the clubs out there, you know, sometimes crazy is not a bad thing. Now, also for the clubs, a lot of them sit down and they wonder how they're going to put on such a big event. So I'm just wondering if you can walk us through the key milestones that you have to go through as a committee to get this up and running every year.
Sure. We've got a board of about 9 people, usually 3 representatives from each club, and we have our Commodore, which is very appropriate for the event, who is the chairperson. Each board member serves for 3 years on the board. The roles are compliance, marketing, sponsorship, treasurer, you know, like a normal board. But some of the major things that need to happen is firstly a big, like a key sponsor. So someone who's willing to contribute between $25,000 and $50,000 for the marketing. There's massive sales on the boats, so great promotional opportunities there, and of course that marketing's going international.
Do you have any trouble like getting a sponsor every year? I mean, is it tough work?
I think not. I think initially in those early days, but now that it's become such a, you know, a recognised event.
It's actually world famous event.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's different tiers of sponsorship available. Right. So you can have a small sale on a boat or a large sale on a boat, or with the another key milestone for the sponsorship is not just that major sponsor, but getting your alcohol sponsors, because it is definitely where people sit down and they have a beer on the riverbank and enjoy the event if they're not participating. And so I guess some of those smaller sponsors are just important to, you know, provide alcohol and signage and so forth. My role is compliance, which was huge, making sure that we've got fireworks permits and licenses, liquor licenses, that all the occupational health and safety is involved. We've got a risk manager, and each year, because some of these activities are huge risk.
Mm.
Like imagine carrying a bath and, you know, you got people running through, someone drops the bath and then you fall over in the sand and,
So walk us through how you would, with compliance, do you form a list? Have you got some kind of, what's the structure of making sure you tick all the boxes? And who do you work with? Do you have any partners? Do you work with the local council?
Absolutely,
kind of things?
So council help us out with the permits for the public spaces, and because there is Indigenous land here, we need to make sure that the Aboriginal authority has been contacted for, use of the land.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
We've got the police and fireys. They help us with the traffic management plan, because we have a big parade that goes through the mall with the boats and all the pirates and so forth, which is lots of fun. We have lots of community support through the sporting clubs. They help us on board. The NT licensing department, and most of these organisations know now, you know, to waive the fees for us or give us reduced costs to help us out. So, the explosive store, make sure that we've got the licence to let firecrackers off for the sound effects and so forth.
Mm.
Lots of liaising with important people. I call, the OAC has to sign off on all our licences to make sure we do the right thing. So, we are accountable for those sort of activities, but I think as the years have gone by, we have to review that risk management every year, and some of the activities still, you know, might be a bit risque. So other than that, we have a hospitality tent. We have someone to organise all of the food and beverages. It's a massive job, like, and it's all done for free. Like, everyone that's on the board and all of the Rotary clubs put in to help. And, you know, we do that for the, our passion for the community and the iconic event. So,
do you have, so do you keep that information on spreadsheets? Is that something that you can go back every year and use? Because I guess what I'm getting at for our folks out there is you must go through an enormous amount of work every year. So how do you make sure that you're not reinventing the wheel all the time?
Yeah, there has to be a handover for new board members.
Right.
That control of risk management and making sure that the event gets bigger and better every year, there does need to be that handover. So we've developed in recent years a board member induction checklist to make sure that new board members are getting information about the event.
Fantastic.
And I don't think Rotarians know what's involved until they do get onto the board. I was one of those. There's a handover done for new board members to make sure they understand their role, where they fit into the board. We have a risk management plan, checklists, we have waiver forms, we have for each position there's an actual sort of position description to make sure that you have got some guidelines in place for, you know, what the role's all about. But after 55 years, you'd expect that we'd have something like that in place. And I think getting good skills on the board is important. So making sure you don't just have anyone go on the board, that you get a nice balance of different skills, which is great for any board. Sometimes there's always recommendations, this person to be good on the board, but we don't need four marketing people. We need a couple of PR people and some good, you know, sponsorship people as well. So, we've got lots and lots of paperwork, but we do have a server and a storage place at our sponsorship and marketing person's office. And so we constantly update that information. We're reviewing our risk management plan this year. Obviously, the traffic management plan has just changed because of the changes to the Todd Mall. It's not easy, but I think it's worth it when you see the end product.
Yeah. And what about on the actual day? What you must have a army of volunteers to help you put this on. How do you manage those? First of all, how do you recruit them? And secondly, how do you mobilise them and manage them on the day?
Sure. So leading up to the event, we put out for volunteers. Mind you that all of the Rotary clubs combined would be about 80 volunteers. And then we put out, you know, a community notice for any members of the public that want to be involved. Once they've signed up to be a volunteer, we give them a t-shirt so they're identified as part of the team. And each week for about 6 weeks leading up to the event, we have briefing meetings to make sure that people are, you know about the event. Because if you're coming on as a new volunteer and you've got no idea what to do, we have a HR officer and he coordinates those meetings week to week. The volunteers get a volunteer position description, so they can, you know, sign to say they're signing on as a volunteer. They also sign a waiver to say that they're taking on, you know, the responsibility of being a volunteer. But it's mainly just those briefings week to week that really work, so they know exactly what their role is.
And that's the key, isn't it? So the volunteers know what they're doing on the day, so they're not walking around, you know, confused and stuff like that.
And it does help to try and get them the year after, because of course, like, each year you know more and more about the event. And if you can imagine, like, my role was looking after the bars this year, and I'm stuck, you know, with running liquor across the river on the back of a motorbike, and then you've got the hospitality tent running and all your activities running and your MC and your sound system, and I was looking after security. And to get a big picture of the whole event, it is ideal if you have people that have a little bit of knowledge about how it all works before you get them on board. But, you know, we're happy to take any sort of help. There is a process involved, and, you know, we work on getting that bigger and better every year to make sure our volunteers do feel empowered to be part of the day and feel like part of a team, as well as a clear, you know, position description and what this is all about.
So, you guys have got an extraordinary event. His profile is really high. Is the marketing, I know this, you're not so much into the marketing, but is the marketing just about sustaining that profile, or are you looking for new audiences? I mean, how do you go about marketing the event?
It's funny you should ask that, because we've just revisited that role within our organisation, and we've just put out a new, developed a new position description to try and refresh that position within the Henley on Todd Inc. So in making sure that this does remain and continue to become, I guess, more well known across Australia and internationally. So as far as marketing the event, we get opportunities, Coxie's Big Break TV shows, they do seem to contact us, they hear about us. We had the gentleman that did the Time Walk series, oh, his name will come to me, he's very famous, he was in Blackadder and a lovely bloke, I'll think of it. Robinson? No, Robinson.
Crusoe?
No. Jim Robinson. No, I'll think of it. But yeah, we have people that are very famous that come and approach us about marketing. That role is to be a paid position into the future, so we can make sure that it does get marketed properly. And that would probably be, the marketing and sponsorship role would be one of the largest roles on the board. So we've recognised that it does need to be a professional position and that it needs to be remunerated.
Especially now with the advent, are you finding that you're utilising social media as much as you can, or is that something that you want to explore in terms of marketing the event?
Yeah, into the future. We have got a Facebook page and we've got a website, but obviously there is a culture with Rotary that there's an older generation that is moving in and becoming more familiar with social media. There are still some people that have been with Rotary for a long time that would prefer to, you know, see it happen the old-fashioned way. But into the future, we know, in order to make this grow bigger and better, that we do need to look at social media options for us and market the event a lot more through those channels.
Yeah. Do you have a patron?
No, we've got Henley Heroes.
Right.
So if someone has contributed significantly to the event for a period of time, they get nominated as by the board as a Henley Hero. So there's about 6 or 7 Henley Heroes in that 50-plus years that we've been going. So I guess that's a real honour to be called a Henley Hero. Yeah. Mm.
So your event is done and dusted. You've had a really successful event.
Yeah.
You take aside.
Still recovering.
Recovering. What do you do with everything that you've learned from running the event?
Personally. Yeah. So obviously,
from a committee perspective as well.
Sure. From a committee perspective, I've taken the feedback about how I perceive the event. I've made a suggestion this year that we try and rotate the roles as board members, so we learn more skills about the event. As I mentioned earlier, you can get very caught up in what you're doing to contribute to the event, and seeing it from a board point of view as opposed to a volunteer point of view or a spectator point of view is something that I think is really important. So we've gone out there as a board and we've sought feedback from those sponsors, from those members of the community, from people that have been living here a long time, from people who were visiting interstate or from international that have enjoyed the event, to try and get more feedback about how it can be improved and be better into the future. So I guess just constant feedback and advice from different sort of groups to make sure that we can improve.
And you record that on
we each do a report and then there's an annual report and then there's a feedback sort of matrix, which then sections of the feedback go into the relevant area. So if someone's made a recommendation about how to improve the marketing, then that goes to the marketing coordinator. They do a bit of a review of the risk management plan or the marketing plan, and then we update it for the year after based on the feedback from those different parties.
Mm. And how do you go about insurance?
Yes, We're insured through Rotary International,
which is great.
That's handy. So, because Rotary's huge. Again, I had no idea. I was with the YMCA for a long time, third most recognised logo in the world. But, yeah, Rotary's so big that it has got those sort of infrastructure in place for risk. But, look, we do have to constantly review that risk because we're doing some pretty exciting things out there in the river. You only got to type in the Henley Untied and you'll see what we do. Just Google it.
We will, and so should all of you. Look, thank you so much for your time today. Your experience with the Henley Untied is incredible, and I'm sure that a lot of people watching this video will pick up a lot about how to run a major event, because it's not easy and there's a lot of work that's involved. So on behalf of the sports community, thank you so much.
Pleasure.
And
come to Alice Springs for the Henley Untied.
You're a star.
Support Rotary. Cheers.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Jonah Vella and Steve Pallas. If you've missed a couple of our episodes, why not visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au, and there you'll find all our previous podcasts that you can download. And while you're there, give us a review so you can help spread the news about Sports Community and its services to the grassroots sports clubs. Now, mate, during the week, we got an email, as we often do, from one of our listeners, and they asked the question through the email at jointheshow@sportscommunity.com.au about the best way that their club can go about getting cricket nets.
Yeah, it was a good letter because they included photos of their current nets. And the surrounding areas of their nets as well. So there was no doubt that they certainly do need new nets and a rejuvenation of the facilities that the nets are in. And it's really timely because in Victoria, Joe, we're just coming into an election side of it, an election period. So let's look at looking at this from two or three different angles. The traditional the traditional approach would be for a club to identify a need. In this case, they don't need new nets. They need a place for players to practice and train safely, right? And the way that they can do that best is by improving the nets. So the first thing they need to do is understand what they're trying to achieve. The new nets aren't what they're trying to achieve. What they're trying to achieve is to create a place for players to play and train safely. And to do that, we need the new nets. So then the next step is to then go to council, the sport and rec at council, sport and rec team at council, who you deal with to get your facilities, and say, this is what we want to do. This is what we need, because it's time to rejuvenate the nets. And then council will give you the sport and rec team will give you a pretty good idea of where that would be scheduled in their priorities. You know, whether it's put an application in, a grant application in, and we'll go for it, or get it immediately, or we really don't have funding for 2, 3, 4 years on that project. But what they'll also tell you then, and just whatever answer they give you, don't worry too much about. But what they'll tell you also is the process that you need to go through, which is really, really important, because whether we like it or not, we have to go through a process of applying for funds and council support. So what that process will be different with every council, and it'll be different with every application. Sometimes you may need to get quotes. Sometimes you may need to do a feasibility study or in a master plan for your broader reserve that you're on. So sometimes it's not just as simple as rocking in and saying we would like this to be done, because council take a lot different perspective than what an individual club would. Now the opportunity that happens, or the unique structure of council allows us to also tackle this challenge from top down, at the councillor level. So if we're going through the traditional route that most clubs go through, which is to make an application to the Sport and Rec, Sport and Rec will either accept it and say yes, and they'll include it in this year's budget or next year's budget application, which will then go to council. Council then have to approve it or reject it, but let's say they approve it, and then it becomes a scheduled part of the capital expenditure for the council. But that critical point, councillors either have to accept or reject it, right? So that means that the clubs have the ability to influence the process as well by going and building relationships and taking their request directly to the councillors, who ultimately make the decision as to what they are going to fund and what they aren't going to fund. And one of the great frustrations of council staff is when councillors ignore their recommendations and then just say, no, we're going to go with project A, B or C, regardless of what council recommendation was or the traditional process was. So when we're talking with clubs, we would suggest that when you're looking to build to go down this capital reinvestment program or capital expansion or facility regeneration, that you kind of go top down from councillors, work with the councillors, and bottom up from the Sport and Rec staff. And when I say top down, what I mean is the best way to do that is to somehow get either the mayor or your councillor to come to your club, visualize, putting your arm around them and selling your dream to them. Getting them to visualize what this place would look like if the new nets were done, as opposed to, an eyesore and a safety hazard, which the nets were in the photos that we saw. Because it's a lot easier to sell your dream to a councillor and a mayor if they're standing there in front of you than it is in the 300-word block that they get in that you get in a grant application. So that's the very key thing. One of the key things that you've got to remember when seeking support of council is, at the end of the day, that's what you need is support. So you can't get it if you're in conflict with council. So regardless of what council, how they've placed the priority on your project, you just need to not ever go into conflict. So one of the common mistakes that we see clubs is council say, no, we're not going to schedule you for 5 years or something like that, or indefinitely we haven't got your project as on our priorities. And that's absolutely genuinely fair enough. And so what often we see clubs doing, they run to the media and just poleaxe council in the media. And there's no benefit in that. There's no upside, because what? Council's going to change their mind because of public support, negative public support? Nah, they're not. If anything, that's going to make them more set in their ways. But what will change their mind is positive public support, A, and I'll come back to that, and also clubs putting money on the table and sharing some of the pain, the cost of the asset, because council will looks at value for money. And if clubs are willing to raise funds and put those funds and that commitment onto the table, then that makes it a lot easier for council to accept a project. And one of the best ways that clubs can show that the community is right behind an asset, a community project, is for the community to give their funds to it. So if council haven't supported your project and got it in the priorities in the short term, which you really want, then one of the only ways to change it, bring money to the table or show that the community really wants it. Because that's what councils are there for. They're just acting on the best interests of the community. So if the community gets behind your project, well, you get your project behind the community by saying, and show that the community as a whole, but lots of different community groups specifically, which is a little bit challenging when you're talking something as specific as a cricket nets, but that the community is behind that. And so, yeah, that's where you use the media, not to bash council, but to say, hey, we need your support as the community so that we can reinvest in this case, cricket nets, so that the guys, the boys and the girls and the men and the women can play cricket safely, train and be as much fun as it is for everybody. So one of the things to know, Joe, just in wrapping up this session, is if you're going to go down this path of seeking major funding from council, it's going to take a bit of time. It's going to take a bit of time. And that's one of the other things the clubs don't realise is they want things now. And that's not always possible, particularly when you're looking after, like Mornings Peninsula Shire does, 400 buildings and a couple of hundred recreation reserves.
Thanks for that, mate. We hope that's answered the question. Stay tuned. We've got some more great content coming right up. Okay, we've come to that time where we must say goodbye. But you can get much more of Sports Community at our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au, where you can download previous podcasts, check out latest news in the world of grassroots sports, discover great resources for your club, including grants, take part in our great online training, and much, much more. So until next time, on behalf of me, Joe Novella,
and me, Steve Pallas, thank you for making us part of your sports community.